Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckless AB to CV 2024 Proximo Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
I'm Royal Oaks. Next time on Too Many Lawyers, we take on a couple of villains to sort out whether bad stuff is also illegal stuff. George Santos won a seat in Congress by lying to voters, but is that a crime? And Kanye West made it clear he hates Jews. In England, he'd go to jail for that. Here in America, did he commit a hate crime? Listen to Too Many Lawyers on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Gangsters, what's up, guys?
Kenny Florian.
Oh, my God!
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Ah, it is great to be back with you. As always, Monday, November 26th, 2018. At least that is the day here in the States. This is episode 181 of the Anik and Florian Podcast. I hope everybody had a good Thanksgiving weekend. I shouldn't say everybody, but for all of you for whom that applies, that does apply to Ken Flo Kid, and I know you stayed out west. How you feeling?
I'm feeling good. I ate like such crap. I ate way too much, a ridiculous amount of sugar in my body. I'm still trying to get it out. I got some dieting to do, dude. Serious exercising and dieting ahead.
Yeah. Well, I hear Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is a pretty good workout, that by Rocky BJJ, if you want to try to sweat some of that shit out. Yeah, I mean, I didn't eat as much as I normally do Thanksgiving Day, but that Friday, bro, I mean, I put on a clinic, right? I mean, I think we might have double chin this week if we didn't last week. So my brother-in-law, we went to Connecticut. It was absolutely freezing. I woke up to go to Dunkin' Donuts on Friday morning to begin the food coma early, and it was 9 degrees, I think, you know? So the Florida blood didn't hold up too well. Flying with three kids, absolutely no picnic, would not recommend it. Already getting ahead of it with my wife that next year, you know, daddy's staying home. We got to figure something out, man. You know, and it wasn't even too bad for us. The thing is, just you're always just one moment away from all hell breaking loose, and it's a very uneasy feeling. You know, you fly from LA to Boston and something happens with your baby and she's inconsolable, and you know, everybody's looking at the parents, you know. The old guy in front of my wife was like, "I give up," he says before the flight. My kid had barely done anything, you know. He's like, "I give up," you know. Yeah. Want to say, "Listen,
you ever had a kid? Slap him."
So I was in Connecticut. So my brother-in-law has this projection screen TV. It's like 150 inches on the wall. So a great way to watch football. So I want to take a picture of it. And he's like, oh, well, why don't you have your daughter go stand next to the TV to have some sort of reference, you know? And so she goes and stands next to this 150-inch TV. I take a picture. I put it on Instagram. Next thing you know, everyone's banging on me for, you know, a humble brag about my TV. Like, it's not even my TV. You know, my mom's texting me like, hey, that doesn't look humble. Like, you got to respond to these people. I'm like, I got to respond to these people. I'm in a food coma. I'm not sober. You know, I got to respond to these people. But I just want to say, if that's you're a listener funny. Who thinks I would ever have a 150-inch television, Ken Flo, you know I would never.
At least 100-inch, so, yeah.
At least 100-inch. I got a 65 on the wall downstairs if you're really curious. And it was probably more expensive than the 150-inch projector thing, right? You know? So, all right. So did you wake up for this combat sports and coffee on UFC Fight Pass for Francis Ngannou and Curtis Blaydes? You watched it after the fact?
I did not. I watched it definitely after the fact. I watched it the evening. And, of course, I saw the spoiler. So that's my fault for waiting that long. But, yeah, I did watch it at night. And some good fights. Some exciting really fights. Yeah.
The spoiler thing is tough, though, especially when it's that early. And I was trying to avoid spoilers. I wasn't on social media. I just didn't realize the main card was 6:30 a.m. Eastern. So I was at the airport. I was at JFK, and I went to check where they'd be at, thinking I might be able to watch the main event live.
Yeah.
And the event was over, and I saw the result, and that was unfortunate. It was unfortunate for Curtis Blaydes. It was not for Francis Ngannou. You know, he walks out to All Eyes on Me, Tupac Shakur. All eyes were on him, I think, despite the fact that Curtis Blaydes was the guy who came in with the momentum. And
yeah.
And Francis Ngannou gets it done in 45 seconds, Ken Flo. Your thoughts?
Again, my consistency on these main events are just unbelievable. It was funny. But, no, listen, this was a great surprise because, you know, we talked about it. I was not sure if Francis Ngannou was going to be the same guy again and that he was going to be able to get his confidence back and let those hands go. After that Derek Lewis fight, I kind of had a lot of doubts about him. But I think he was letting his hands fly. He landed that shot very early on. He was looking to be just out of range. So it was a good sign when he was just kind of trying to get in the pocket and he was trying to establish his range very early on. And for Curtis Blaydes, I mean, he really just couldn't get a whole lot going. It was an early shot that took him out. I actually liked the stoppage. I know Curtis was kind of complaining about it, but he was eating some heavy shots. He just wasn't able to recover.
Yeah, despite the immediate protest, Kenny, he didn't seem to be intelligently defending himself. Yeah. I could talk both sides of it, but largely I thought it was good work from Mark Goddard. I thought it was a good tweet from Jordan Breen about the stoppage. Jesus, Ngannou wiped Blaydes out in 25 seconds. He did it so fast it actually fucked ref Mark Goddard up. Goddard's a fantastic official, but committed the cardinal sin of touching the attacking fighter and jumping back out trying to get Blaydes second life. What a blasting. But you remember, I always reference the Pat Barry Czech Congo when Dan Mergliotta touches Pat Barry, right? And this wasn't that type of touch, right? Yep. He barely grazed the fighter, and maybe he didn't have the most opportune angle, and we know Curtis Blaydes is going to shoot, whether it's a desperation shot or otherwise, but I thought largely the stoppage was okay. As far as Ngannou, it's hard to read too much into this result for me, right? On paper, he improves to 12-3. He still has never been finished. But after fighting 40 minutes, Kenny, his last two fights, going the distance and a couple of losses, he wipes him out here in 45 seconds. I mean, what does this tell you about the extent to which Ngannou is back? Does it tell you anything about the Derek Lewis fight and what the hell that was? Like, tell me something, because I don't, you know, want to sit here and say I have no answers, but I'm not willing to just anoint Francis Ngannou based upon one connection here.
And I think that's accurate. Now, listen, out of that 40 minutes, we could probably deduct 15 minutes of that fight against Derek Lewis. Really, there wasn't a whole lot of fighting that went on. But no, for sure. Listen, I don't think he was trying to throw his hands at all. He seemed very tentative. He seemed very afraid of letting those hands go. In this fight, at the very least, it seems like that fear is gone. You know, his willingness to want to trade, I think, is back. But you're right. We never really saw him have to defend if he got taken down. And, you know, what was his defense like to get back to his feet? What was his defense like if he was kind of pinned on the mat with Curtis Blaydes on top of him in half guard or guard? We didn't get to get any answers to those questions. But as far as on the feet, he did seem pretty confident. He was letting the hands go. That's a good sign. But I think you're right. Anytime you see these quick finishes, which is why I think it was so hard to really look at Ngannou and call that fight accurately against Stipe Miocic, because he just didn't have a whole lot of octagon time. He was knocking everybody out. We really didn't know how good he really was. And I don't think we're any closer to that answer either. So Ngannou's one of those guys who's just really hard to predict on what he's going to do.
But if he can sort of parlay some development and improvement in all phases with the physical gifts, I still think, as I thought going into the Stipe fight, as many did when he was favored to become the UFC heavyweight champion, I still think he can be the UFC heavyweight champ. I mean, I know Montel Jackson, UFC bantamweight, has bigger hands than Ngannou, but dude, I mean, do you see, like, what's the glove size? You know, when he kicks your lower half, feels like he kicks as hard as anybody in this division, even if the technique isn't perfect, you know? Right. So I'm still excited about him. And certainly when you look at the heavyweight division big picture, you do have young up and coming guys tied to Tuivasa, who we'll get to later. You know, this is a healthy result for the heavyweight division, right? Even if Curtis Blaydes was tracking to be the greatest wrestler on paper in terms of takedowns in UFC heavyweight history, this is a big result, I think, for the UFC heavyweight division. And Ngannou very much gave them something to work with here with this type of 45-second knockout that sort of gets him back to what got him on that fast track.
And John, I hope that they still see him as a project, both his coaches and the UFC, because I still think there is a lot of room for improvement, especially when it comes to the wrestling and the ground game. And if he gets that in order and gets more technical on the feet, this is a guy who could potentially be a heavyweight champion. So he has some work to do, but let him develop. Get that training in. Get those right fights to move him along.
I wonder how Daniel Cormier feels about Francis Ngannou and whether that was the type of opponent that he would have stepped up and faced in a similar circumstance to the Derek Lewis fight, right? Mm. You know, I feel like Ngannou maybe is scarier for Cormier, but he still feels like he could take him down and submit him the way he did Derek Lewis. I don't know. Interesting conversation nonetheless. As far as spinning it forward for Ngannou, and then we will get to Curtis Blaydes. So he called out Junior Dos Santos. Obviously, the calendar makes sense because he fights in a main event here in a week against Tai Tuivasa. Also called out Alexander Volkov. I feel like he sort of grabbed that out of thin air a little bit, but you can understand rankings-wise why he would have been on his radar. And then he called for the rematch against Stipe, which I like, right? I like the fact that he wants to sort of prove that those 25 minutes were the worst possible reflection of himself. What do you think they do with Ngannou? You said that you'd like them to proceed cautiously with him. What do you think? The winner of Tuivasa, Junior Dos Santos, who might be next for Francis Ngannou in your mind?
Well, listen, I like the fact that he's calling out Stipe. I don't think that's the fight for him for his next fight. Listen, can he knock out Stipe Miocic? Of course. He has the power. He has the speed and the size to get it done against anybody in that division, but I would like to see him develop. I think a fight against Alexander Volkov kind of makes sense. Volkov is coming off a loss, Ngannou coming off a win. You know, maybe the winner of Junior Dos Santos and Tuivasa, I think that's one that probably makes a little bit more sense. And I think he should be matched up against other guys that are good on the feet, who can maybe threaten with some takedowns. That way he can develop that aspect of his game. But I would slow the roll a little bit. I would take its time. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I will say, too, in working for the UFC, and we all get to know these athletes, their ups, their downs, their egos and everything else, I can't help but feel good for Francis Ngannou, given where he was, how quickly his ascent was, how seemingly quick the demise followed, and now the two-fight losing streak's a thing of the past, and he's got a 45-second knockout against a guy on paper who had the best winning streak in the division. So I feel good for Francis Ngannou, and of course, there's always a loser in the equation. That is Curtis Blaydes. And what's interesting is that this was the fight, the one he wanted to get back, his only professional loss. Obviously, it came in his UFC debut. And other than a title fight, this was the fight that really appealed to Curtis Blaydes. And Ken Flo, he failed on his first takedown attempt 19 seconds in. And the end of the fight for him came shortly thereafter. I guess it's back to the drawing board for your boy Curtis Razor Blaydes.
Yeah, back to the drawing board indeed. And, you know, what's funny is you look at the contrast of what these guys are looking at now after this fight. Ngannou, I mean, I don't think the UFC would have cut Ngannou if he lost his third fight in a row, but man, they would be on two different, very different paths if Ngannou lost that one. Obviously, now he won. He won impressively. He is back on track. And for Curtis Blaydes, who was coming in with some excellent momentum, losing this fight in a rematch against Ngannou, a guy that he probably matched up pretty well against, wasn't able to hit that takedown initially, got rocked, ate some big shots. This is a tough loss for him. Because it is a rematch loss. This is a guy that he's lost to twice now. Right. And Blaydes was having a lot of momentum. He was calling for that title shot. He believed that he could be a champion in that division. Now he still might be able to, but not a great result for him. It's going to be interesting to see who he picks moving forward. Now, he might face a guy like a Volkov. That could be an interesting fight, and that's not an easy one either. So this sport is just absolutely brutal, man.
You know, sometimes I overstate these losses as setbacks, but when you look at career trajectory and you sort of set it up in terms of these guys could have been going in completely different directions. But, man, what a win does for Ngannou and what a loss does to Curtis Blaydes, he's 27, right? So you got to think he's got at least a run or two left in him.
Yes.
But this delays things, you know, 18 to 24 months. It really does, you know, and it puts him at a position where maybe when he's 29, 30 years old, he gets back into position. So I feel for Curtis Blaydes because if there were some different circumstances, right, had Stipe won, had Brock Lesnar not come back for the Cormier fight potentially, right, Curtis Blaydes could have already realized a UFC title fight. And now that's not going to happen for a couple years, and maybe he'll be better off for it, right? I mean, I think this loss gives him maybe more to chew on than the previous Ngannou loss, and I know Curtis Blaydes, as hard a worker as anybody in the room, will be back in a good way, but you know, one man's pleasure is another man's pain, and this got to be a tough Monday morning to wake up if you are Curtis Razor Blaydes. Also on the card, a big win for Alistair Overeem as he sends Sergey Pavlovich out a loser in his UFC debut. Fight lasted 4 minutes and 21 seconds, and I think the nature of this win is probably what's most impressive, and I got to think pretty cool for Overeem given that his face was pounded through the canvas by Curtis Razor Blaydes to get a win by ground strikes here. Overeem throwing it back a little bit over the weekend, kid.
Yeah, he also looked a lot better to me. Mentally, physically, I think that was the best shape that I've seen Alistair Overeem in a long time. He seemed like he had a little extra pep in his step. He was moving well. And he's this guy who just keeps lingering in the UFC heavyweight division. And it's amazing what he's done in his combat sports career. Hasn't been able to really get it done in the UFC as far as getting the belt. But he's always going to be there right around the top. He'll lose one. He'll win one. He'll win a couple. Then he'll lose one. But the fact that you know, he won and won in the fashion that he did against a dangerous Russian fighter, I think is a good sign. You know, I wasn't sure what kind of Overeem we were going to see. He's been extremely inconsistent. I went the way of the Russian. I was very wrong. And it's good. Overeem has switched things up with his training a little bit, and he looked good. It seemed like he's got a nice fit there.
And Pavlovich did land a big right hand early. Always banging on yourself for these picks, Ken Flo. Yeah. I wonder what type of fighter Ray Longo would have been if he would have been like a ground and pound guy. Sorry to keep you on hold, Ray. Let's get to the Ray Longo Minute.
It's now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in his fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute. Starring Ray Longo. The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
So our fine producer, Ben Wasorek, sends me a text message when we have Ray Longo on the line, and I was so impassioned in our conversation that I failed to check my phone. Y'all, the All-American is here.
What's going on? Have you guys ever heard of the All-American burger?
Chris, congratulations on the pregnancy. You look great. That's awesome.
I appreciate it.
Is it a boy or a girl?
Wait a minute.
Twins? What is it?
I think it's a boy. Oh. I'm not really sure. Hold on a second. See the screen? Look at the screen. Look! It's a little PG!
I don't
want to
waste a Longo minute.
Go on, Kenny. Stop.
Well, can you guys switch seats? Can we get Chris Wilder?
Dr. Longo in the office.
You didn't know I was a gynecologist?
You're an amateur. Everyone's an amateur gynecologist, I think.
I'm still a gynecologist.
Hello, Kenny. Go.
Oh, my God. Is this the way we're starting out?
Yeah, this is good. I just would like to let the listeners know, for those that don't get video, that Longo was just, what, giving an ultrasound to Chris Weidman's post-Thanksgiving stomach? Is that what just happened?
Yes, in the medical field, John, that's called an ultrasound, yes.
So so what was the extent of your competing in combat, you know, I mean, in terms of your own boxing? I mean, when did you first put on a pair of boxing gloves, hit a bag? I mean, what was the path for you in sort of getting into this boxing MMA world?
Man, I was like 13, started taking martial arts back in a time when, you know, there wasn't really much going on. And that was it. Always was, you know, boxing in the neighborhood, that type of shit. But that was like a normal thing to do back then in the early 70s, I guess. But, yeah, I think I started training in 73 in a kung fu system. I always liked the Chinese martial arts. And then in the 80s, I got into the Jeet Kune Do stuff. And, you know, I gravitated more towards, like, Richard Bustillo was big on the boxing and kickboxing. So, I mean, but I loved the Kali, too. I mean, I did everything. But I found that that's why I liked going that route. And that was it.
So where were you for UFC 1 in 1993? Do you remember watching that live, or was it something you saw after the fact?
No, I remember watching it live. Yeah. And I'm sure I was in my living room but with a couple of guys. And, yeah, everything was new back then. You got to remember, I think I started doing jiu-jitsu in – when was the first UFC?
November of 1993.
Yeah, so I'm going to say – late 92, early 93, I dislocated my shoulder. I was doing jiu-jitsu. That's where I met Matt Serra, really, for the second time, but that's where we really became close. We were doing jiu-jitsu at Uishi Dojo in Manhattan with Craig Kukoc.
Yeah.
He was one of the first black belts for Horry and Gracie, and he moved to New York. And, yeah, there was nobody there. Absolutely nobody there. He was actually asking me, how do you make money as a martial arts instructor? And I was, you know, I already had a school. I already had a couple of kickboxing champs. So I would actually take my students there just to get some people in the room. There was really nobody. Wow. And then I'm probably screwing this up. I dislocated my shoulder in some crazy sparring in the city. So I was out. In between that time, the UFC hits, and when I go back to jiu-jitsu, it went from like six people to two, you know, like the 9 o'clock class had 30, and then the other class had 30. So, yeah, so we, so that's how it really started with that. So I was already doing jiu-jitsu at the time, and now obviously teaching. And again, I had a couple of one kickboxing champ. I actually even had some, Kali champs in some of the local tournaments, but, yeah, so I met Matt, and I'm assuming I watched the first one with him, believe it or not, but I'd have to really think about that. But by the time I got back and I was rehabbed from my shoulder, I got to tell you, that class went from five people to 60 people. And from there, it just kept growing and growing and growing, and we were all trying to figure stuff out. And, you know, I had a funny conversation with Mike Pyle like a couple of years ago where, you know, because he had come to my school with Rodrigo Gracie way before that, I think. And, you know, it was like you would go from seminar to seminar. Kenny, you can appreciate this. And you get one or two moves, man. You were like the king, you know. But they kept stringing you along. And it was really right at the beginning. It was a great period of time. And I'm going to say for probably a couple of months, I was a jiu-jitsu superstar, you know, until everybody started catching on. Like, you know, at that time, Kenny, you had a couple of moves. They worked on everybody.
Yes.
Nobody knew what the hell was going on.
They were like superpowers back then. Brazilian jiu-jitsu was like superpowers, yeah.
And then, you know, a month later, you didn't have those powers anymore. You had to get another move. And, you know, it was kind of like that. But it was great being around Sarah because he really put the time in, and he was just – he would just beat the crap out of everybody in that class. That guy was an absolute phenom back then. And that was it, you know. I don't know if that answers your question, but –
Did you play other sports growing up, or once you found martial arts at 13, were the rest history? How'd that all go down?
I'm going to say playing baseball up until that point, and then up that point. Yeah, once I hit martial arts, man, it was that was it. That's all I gave a shit about, you know?
Yeah. So in terms of like your – and we're going to get to Aya Quinta here in a moment and anything else you got going on. But in terms of your best moment as a coach, I mean, I think most if they – had to answer that question for you, they would say Weidman's first win over Anderson Silva. But maybe it was a Ring of Combat championship in which you knew you had a guy on the path to future greatness. What's the best moment for you in a mixed martial arts cage or setting in your career?
Man, I tell you, man, I think I've been fortunate enough. I've really had so many great moments. I wouldn't even want to think to pick. I'm just happy that when the guys win today, I still have the same passion about that I did from the first time. So I think when that disappears, I'll probably disappear. But, the stakes are so high now. When anybody gets a win, it's a big win right now. It really is. You know, these guys are all fighting the top of their division. Most of the guys, and it's good seeing some of the other guys coming up, but they're all really good moments. I don't have one particular moment, and honestly, there's never any time to even think about it, because once
That's
one of those
true.
Big moments is up, you move right on to the next moment, the next week. I mean, things are just booking, you know, and I don't have time to, you know, really, dwell on some of the losses. You just pick yourself up and you just keep trying to do a better job and move on. So it's been a great run, and I love it.
Ray, what do you think is the biggest change since the first time you cornered in the UFC to today?
I just think the preparation for the fights for me, how to cut weight. I mean, I remember going there with Matt and even being there that week. And then I think Gil Castillo.
Yeah.
I think, you know, he helped us out with a weight cut once we were lost. You know what I mean? Everybody was, you know, it was like an arms race. Everybody was trying to, you know, do a new way of training or, you know, do something different. So, like, again, that was a good period of time. And I think, Kenny, I think you helped us out with the water loading one time.
Yes.
I think you spoke to somebody. And,
yep.
Like, at that time, that stuff was gold, man. And now it's I think that's the biggest change is that the nutrition and the weight cutting is really down to a science now. And, the attributes of everybody getting better and, you have to be squared away in all departments. But I think that part is really, really gotten scientifically way better than, you know, there was a lot, you know, you bring in a wrestling guy, everybody had their own way of doing it. It was still crazy. It was still on the treadmill with a rubber suit or doing something that, you know, I don't know. So I'm going with the nutrition. I think that's been a big deal.
What's wrong with the rubber suit, bro?
No, there's nothing wrong with it, but I got to tell you, man, there's a wrong way and a right way to cut weight in that for years. You know, like I would get a boxing guy and it would be totally different than what a wrestling guy was doing. It was just, you know, there was no consistency, I don't think. And now everybody's really became really scientific about it, to where if you really follow what these guys are saying, you'll have a pretty healthy weight cut, you know, given all the other factors, that as healthy as it could be.
I'm running in black Glad trash bags down here in South Florida outside right before I go on television. That's how I cut weight.
Yeah.
So
wow.
I'm old school, Rick. all right, so Ally Quinta is 19 days out from a headlining spot against Kevin Lee. I lose my appetite when I start to talk about this fight because I'm so excited for this headliner. A nice way for us to usher out Fox Sports on December 15th. From your standpoint, you're in a good mood today, so I can already read into that a little bit. A lot of the hay is in the barn. How is Raging Al 19 days out from this main event in Milwaukee?
I was with him last night. He had a great night. He had a great weekend. Looking good. It's going to be a great fight, man. It really is, because I think you're going to see the best Kevin Lee against the best Ally Quinta. I think that's all you could ask for, and I think these guys are going to bring it. And Al's very psyched. For me, again, it's just making sure I get the healthiest Ally Quinta in there on the 15th, and it'll be a great night.
All right, last thing, Francis Ngannou, Curtis Blaydes. You lost $25. Okay, so you had a chance to win $100. You took the favorite. It did not work out for you. Did you see the fight? Did you wake up early for it? And any thoughts on Francis Ngannou on the way up?
I didn't see the fight. I saw a clip of it, and it, man, power to him. I really didn't think he was winning that fight. I did not think he was going to win. I like Curtis Blaydes. I think he's an up-and-comer. And I think power to Ngannou for turning that around, you know, so.
See, everyone was giving me a hard time for getting another pick wrong. Ray did the same thing, guys, okay?
Yep.
We're in this together.
Oh, and I'll tell you, and I really, really believed that Blaydes was winning that fight.
Yeah.
Like, I really thought it wasn't even going to be that hard of a fight. But like, power to Logano, man. Dude, yep. He's a big dude. And I don't know. I mean, was there anything with that? I mean, I didn't see the fight, but I saw a clip. I looked like it might have got stopped early. I don't know. It looked like the guy was coherent, but he was under attack. But I don't know. If he weathers that storm, maybe it's different. But
you know, it's almost like if a TV producer tells me to make an argument on one side or the other, I could probably argue it was a touch premature and there was a little bit of referee error. But by and large, Kenny and I thought Goddard did a good job, and Blaydes wasn't necessarily intelligent in the way he was trying to defend himself. So
exactly. All right. Yeah. No, I mean, I really saw like a really crappy clip. I didn't see any of the fights.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to get that Kenflo VIP UFC Fight Pass membership, and then you can watch it anytime you want, Ray. Okay, you know what? I'm gonna see if I can see what it would take to get you that VIP. You don't have that VIP treatment. Weidman's got it.
Weidman, does he have that treatment? That
I would think so. Bitch. I would think he does. All right, well, my
know,
man.
They favor pregnant people. They're always partial to somebody who's pregnant.
So. By the way, we are going to have Longo make picks head-to-head against Kenny Florian for the final pay-per-view of the year. So that's going to be a fun
horrible
wrinkle.
I just screwed up Ngannou.
See? So did I. So it's even.
So, Ray, you do have an opportunity. Two UFC main events this weekend if you want to put the money on the line.
No
you win
more
100.
Money. Come on.
You win 100 or lose 25. Rafael Dos Anjos against Kamaru Usman. Tai Tuivasa against Junior Dos Santos. Those are your UFC main events this weekend. Do you have any selections for our Anakin Florian podcast listeners?
No.
Okay. All right. He's keeping the money in the can. The check, I will present you with the check.
I refuse
the
to
cash.
Pick. I don't want to lose anymore. It's awful.
When I see you in Milwaukee, I will be presenting your final 2018 tally. Would you like a check or cash?
Oh, cash is king.
Cash
baby.
Is okay. King.
Right.
Cash is
but king. I want your wife to know that we gave you a Christmas gift. You know, I don't know if she'll know if I.
Yeah,
just
you might
cash.
As well just you want to make you can make it out to her name. Give me a check.
It's just gonna go to her anyway.
That's where it's going anyway.
Yeah. All right. Love you, buddy. We'll talk to you next Monday. Thank you.
All right. Take it easy, guys.
Good stuff, Ray.
How about Ray Longo not wanting to make predictions on this weekend?
He wants to keep the money.
Headlining
he realized
fights.
He was losing the money. And he wants to keep as much as possible. I think it's a smart move. He was on a little bit of a – I mean, he wasn't getting any of those right. I mean, every opportunity that you gave him to make some money, he wasn't capitalizing.
No, and then, of course, insult to injury. We gave him these great incentives for Weidman and finishing. Yeah. If he gets a win, you know, I probably jinxed that whole thing. But he could have had Kamaru Usman at minus 300. And essentially, I'm giving him plus 400 on any fighter he wants in both of those fights. And very interesting. Almost anybody sane of mind would have taken that bet. But
doesn't want the
but
action.
That's Ray Longo. So UFC featherweight Brian T. City Ortega absolutely loves the fight, loves the strategy. You know what else he loves? Toyo tires, because like Ortega, Toyo tires are as tough as they come, and they are the official tire of the UFC. You know, there's a lot to love about Toyo tires. Aggressive design, proven on and off-road capabilities. These tires are for any weather, and they've got the toughness to back up that claim. There's just a confidence that comes with tough tires. So no matter what you're driving, no matter where you're driving, you can count on Toyo tires. Of course, they look great as well. They are the choice of so many fighters on this UFC roster. UFC Bantamweight champ TJ Dillashaw, Dominic Cruz. All these guys are driving with Toyo. Tough people love tough tires. Toyo tires have been proven time and time again. So if you're tough, these are the tires for you. Toyo tires. The next time you need tires, ask for Toyo, the official tire of the UFC. Learn more at toyotires.com/UFC, toyotires.com/UFC. So, Kenny, in 1993, November, you would have been 17 years old.
Oof.
Do you remember where you were? Did you watch UFC 1 live or after the fact?
I did not. I watched it after the fact.
So I probably took a break from UFC 1 in 1993 until like UFC 50 in 2004. I think I saw UFC 1 and 2, and then for whatever reason there was a break. But I did watch UFC 1 live. I was in Newton, Massachusetts at Dan Sherman's house watching on pay-per-view. I think I tried to go to second base with a young woman named Sarah that night. I don't know if I succeeded on that, but I was watching UFC 1 live in 1993 when I was like 15 years old. So I do remember that. I don't remember a lot of things, but I do remember that. All right, so we were talking about Alistair Overeem when Longo so rudely interrupted. It feels like he put in the right work. Like, I'm not trying to read into his physique, but maybe I'm reading into his post-fight interview when he referenced the hard work. And again, this could – so at heavyweight, at this level, 60 pro fights in or whatever he is, you know this can go the other way. You know that right hand from Sergey could have landed a little bit harder, and that could have been the beginning of the end for Alistair Overeem. So the fact that he hung in there, took a couple shots, granted not right on the bell, but took a couple shots and then grounded out his opponent like that, I think is a huge feather in the cap of Overeem. And not unlike Ngannou, you know, just feel good for a good man, a father, I think, of four, and this is a big win for Alistair Overeem at this stage of his career.
It is. It's a huge win. And because he's such a big name and because he's climbed at the top of the mountain, he could potentially be back there. Yes, he's at the end of his career, but, you know, it's possible that he can make another run and a few wins in the heavyweight division, which isn't, you know, certainly not as vast as the 155-pound division, for example, or the welterweights. You know, a few wins and you're right back in there.
Well, not unlike Andrei Arlovsky. Right. I mean, he's always going to be a name that they can either, you know, promotionally use to maybe try to vault a guy. Mm-hmm. That doesn't always work out, of course. But, you know, over you win one fight, you could be in a main event. Right. They headline heavyweights all the time. So I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know who it'll be against. But to see Alistair Overeem, his next fight be like an ESPN plus type UFC fight night main event. Li Jingliang. I love the leech, Ken Flo. You know I love the leech. I mean, I'm like screen grabbing his post-fight interview to have a picture of the leech on my phone, right? And this was just a very big win for him as he gets it done with the body kick against David Zawada. You don't see this, Ken Flo, every day. I mean, a fight finish with a side kick. I think maybe the heel to the solar plexus. Is that accurate? Mm-hmm. Talk us through that finish in round three for the leech.
He timed it beautifully, and whether you're working a teep or a sidekick, I think it is best used to counter the forward motion of your opponent. And he timed it beautifully right down the middle. And that's kind of the one spot where, you know, if you're keeping your hands up, where you all are vulnerable. And Zawada, you know, is a tough striker in his own right, but ran right into that. And those body shots are just brutal. No matter how much you want to continue fighting, your body just simply just does not let you kind of get upright, and it took the wind right out of him. And from there, you get a true fighter in the leech, and he's going to take you out, man. This is a guy who, you know, not everybody has that it's time to get nasty attitude when they step into the octagon, and that dude is a fighter, you know. And we've seen some dirty things from him in the past, but he's just mean, and I got to admit, I kind of like it. I mean, this guy, wants to go out there, and he's trying to hurt people. He loves to fight. He's not a guy who's out there looking to try to outpoint you or look for a decision. Right. He wants to hurt you from the opening bell to the very end, and he's been delivering a lot of exciting fights because of it. He actually got dropped, or I think maybe got dazed at one point. His knees buckled, was able to get right back into the fight against Zawada, who was very aggressive and pretty good in his own right on the feet, but Li Jingliang, man, I was impressed.
And certainly not afraid to get hit, right? And was moving his head a whole bunch in this fight, and the head movement helped him out at times. But you're right, he did get cracked early on. He was to face Eliseo Zaleski dos Santos, who I believe is number 14 or number 15 in the world. So they're moving the leech in the right direction. I think in Zaleski dos Santos, he'll have sort of a willing party in terms of trying to just put on a sick fight for the fans, and you can see why they made that matchup. So perhaps that'll be next for the leech. You referenced sort of some dirty moments for the leech, right? And everybody will certainly point to the Jake Matthews fight. I don't know if he was fish hooking from the bottom. Right. My memory's not great, whatever it was. In this fight, Kenny, you also had it at the end of round two, I believe it was. Some would say it's dirty. Dan Hardy vehemently on the other side of this debate, but blatantly two or three hooks thrown, at least two and one-third punches, I think, as they put it on the broadcast, thrown by Li Jingliang after the horn.
Yeah.
But referees and a lot of fighters are adamant that that horn is not for the fighters, it is for the referees, and that should result in action from the referee, not necessarily inaction from the fighters. I don't know if you saw the end of that round. You know, it didn't sit super well with me, but I understand this is sort of so it goes, right?
I did see that. And also, you know, maybe to defend the leech a little bit, it can be very hard to hear the bell, not only when you're in the moment and you're throwing a combination, but also with the crowd and the referee and, you know, the excitement. It can be hard to hear that. We remember the Aldo fight against Mendez in the rematch in Brazil. You know, there was a dispute about that, of whether, you know, Aldo was able to hear the bell in there. And I think a lot of people who were there at the fight actually didn't hear the bell at the end of that round either. So it can be difficult to hear. But, you know, because of his past history, and the thing that happened with Jake Matthews, whether it's the eye gouging or, you know, the fish hooking, you know, maybe he did hear it. That's the thing. Maybe he did hear it.
Given the past history, right? It's almost like Dan Hardy is telling this roster to a man, to a woman, to fight through the horn, not to the horn, right? Yeah. And it's almost like, yeah, you know what? If this is the way Mark Goddard and the referees are approaching this, then yeah, fight through the horn, right? I mean, it's like, because I can't tell you how many times, Kenny, at the end of a round, you end up against the fence, and it's almost like, you know, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, right? Like, get away with as many fence grabs until they warn you. They never do so sternly. I don't know. I think that's setting a bad precedent. And, you know, I understand. I'm not a fighter, right? So I can't relate to hearing that horn in combat. But I will tell you, that horn sounded sure as fuck like the loudest thing in that arena by a mile when they blew it on Saturday night.
I agree. I saw it a few times, and yeah, I looked at my buddy who was I was watching it with, and I was like, "Oh yeah, it seems like the leech is back at it again."
Yeah,
because he landed those first two shots in the combination. He's like, "You know what? Fuck it. Let me throw another couple more." Yeah.
Well, he's trying to light up the crowd, and I love so much of it. There's no malice with this guy. You know, he's one of the nicest guys
on
the roster.
He's a fighter, though, man.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
he is.
And he's fighting through that horn. And if you're a fighter listening to this, man, you know, I'd fight through that horn, man. Yeah. I don't care how loud it is or how quiet the arena is.
Yep.
Keep punching. If it's the referee's job, he better jump in there, because you're a fighter and you're fucking throwing hooks after the horn, whether they like it or not. All right, so we have a lot of picks to make today, but a few other things to get to as we sort of empty out the MMA news desk here. Israel Adesanya, the last stylebender, is going to fight Anderson Silva, UFC 234, second weekend in February on pay-per-view. Silva's last win, of course, Derek Brunson in 2017, serving USADA suspension since. That was a fight that arguably could have gone the other way, and that was his first win since 2012. Adesanya, of course, on a roll in the UFC, going in the completely opposite direction. I think in some part, Kenny, this is a backup plan in case Robert Whittaker or Kelvin Gastelum is unable to make the walk or unable to make weight. I think they would absolutely slide Adesanya in, and if needed, maybe for an interim championship against Gastelum or for the undisputed title against Whittaker. I absolutely believe they would do that. But a lot of opinion, Kenny, on both sides of this Adesanya-Silva matchup being made. It's hard not to have some excitement. I can understand why others are questioning the promotion's decision to go in this direction.
Oh, first of all, in regards to someone slipping into the main event in case one of those guys gets injured, I think it's a fight that makes a lot of sense. And you're seeing the UFC do this more and more for these important fights, at least have a good backup plan. I agree. It's something you gotta do. Now, as far as the Adesanya and Anderson Silva fight, it's interesting. And again, it all comes down to your perspective. Anderson Silva is now, what, 40?
43.
Oh, my gosh. He's older than me?
Ha!
I didn't know that. I'm going to look that up,
but I thought it was 43. I'll look that up while you're yapping.
Whoops. All right. He's 43. Okay. Well, listen. Obviously, at the end of his career, he is, you know, he was Adesanya before Adesanya was probably fighting MMA at that point. So we do have this true new school versus old school fight. The former champ at 185 pounds, and obviously a terrific platform for Adesanya to show just how good he is. Now, Anderson Silva certainly isn't the same guy. I think he still loves to fight, still is motivated to go out there and perform and put on good fights and make some good money in the UFC. But, you know, if you're looking at it, from the outside in and just seeing this trend of what promotions do both in boxing and in mixed martial arts, this is that big kind of platform for Adesanya to go look how good I am. Look how much I've surpassed former champions like Anderson Silva. Anderson Silva was good, but I'm even better. I've taken what he has done and taken it to the next level. So it really is an unbelievable opportunity for Adesanya to showcase his skills against one of the greatest to ever compete inside the octagon. And I think it's an exciting fight just from that standpoint. If Anderson Silva is able to go and just kind of let his hands fly and let his strikes do what they do, I think he could potentially surprise people as well. He doesn't have to worry about a takedown. He doesn't have to worry about a ground game. And who knows, maybe Anderson Silva is the guy who actually tries to take this fight to the ground because he would have the advantage there as the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. So I'm intrigued with this fight. There's no doubt about it. This is a very interesting fight.
Anderson Silva, April 14th, 1975. So he is 43 years old. I'm going to read another tweet here from Jordan Breen, at Jordan Breen on Twitter. Silva Adesanya will do next to nothing to make the younger fighter a better mixed martial artist. This is a play to build Israel's name, not prepare him for what comes next, which should be the priority. Also, if Israel does his thing, that means an all-time great got used. I think that's one argument here, right, is that in a perfect world, people would like to see Adesanya against Paulo Costa, right, a young contender who's in the top five, who would be much more logical if there was a bracket, but we just don't have a bracket, and ultimately, this is a business in some respects, and the UFC has to do what they think is best. I think the matchup has more merit, obviously, than people like Jordan Breen do. I really do. You know, I don't know what the betting line is going to be. If Adesanya ends up a minus 750 favorite, you know, then I would have been way off base. But I think it'll be closer than that. If the fight won't be closer than that, I don't know how close the fight's going to be. But I just feel like some of the negativity that's out there when there's a matchup like this that gets announced, I think it seems to me like a lot of MMA fans who are complaining should be a little bit conditioned to this. And I don't know that it's any huge statement about where the UFC is in 2018 versus where they were in 2014. I think they see enough merit in this matchup to strategically make it. And I don't think it comes down to much more than that.
I agree. And listen, I don't know this is the case, but how do we not know that Anderson Silva was the guy who actually asked for this fight?
Right.
Anderson Silva has a tremendous belief in himself, maybe to a fault, perhaps. I think the very thing that makes someone a fighter is the very thing that keeps him in the game probably a little bit too long, as we saw this weekend as well with Tito and Chuck Liddell. But, I think that for this fight, it's something that is always going to happen in combat sports. And the fighters involved always have the right to say, you know what, and the management, this is a fight that doesn't make sense for us. Obviously, both parties agreed at the end of the day. It's something we've been seeing in combat sports for a very long time. Two guys who are interesting strikers. Of course, Anderson Silva was, one of the best strikers we had ever seen. And Israel Adesanya trying to be the best and take it to another level. So it's an interesting fight because of it.
And an interesting layer for me is that Adesanya, not that he's preparing for three opponents. And if you know anything about Adesanya, he's not really worried about the opponent. But I think he's got to prepare for a five-round championship fight on February 9th or 10th, right? Because you just don't know what's going to happen with any of those three guys. And for Adesanya, obviously, it's going to be a huge fight regardless. And if he beats Anderson Silva, big one's coming next. Might even fight for the UFC middleweight title. All right, we're going to spin it forward here to the two UFC live events this weekend. Before we do, though, Ken Flo, Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz fought for a third time over the weekend. Chuck Liddell is going to be 49 years old in 3 weeks. This was an itch that he wanted to scratch. Did you entertain ordering this on pay-per-view? Did you pluck down your hard-earned $39.99? To what extent was Liddell Ortiz 3 on your radar Thanksgiving weekend, my man?
It was on my radar. Did I watch it? No. Was I thinking about paying for it? No. I think we kind of, and listen, I love Chuck. I absolutely love the guy. The guy is one of the best fighters to ever compete inside the octagon. One of the nicest gentlemen you'll ever meet. And this was a fight where, going into this, I said, this is the one time where Tito Ortiz could actually beat Chuck Liddell. And we all age differently. We all you know, have our peaks at different times in our life. And, you know, this was one that I was a little bit concerned with for Chuck and Tito. And, you know, my perspective on it is that I want to give people the best of me. I want people to see me compete at my best. And I don't even care necessarily about that. I want to see myself compete at my best when I'm at my physical peak. And I always said if my body wasn't going to be 100%, I wasn't going to do it. It's just not worth it. I want to see what I'm capable of. And at 49 right. years old, 48 years old, getting close to the 50s, I don't know if we really wanted to see that. I didn't. You know, I think we have to also give big time kudos to Dana White for, you know, putting his foot down and going, you know what? Can I make a lot of money on this fight? Absolutely. Am I going to do this? No. It's right. just not a fight that I'm interested in watching, and kudos to him for not making this fight. And I think it was, I mean, when do we stop? You know, are we watching guys fight at 50? You know, are we watching, you know, the best guys in history fight like 10, 20 years after their prime? I mean, it's just not right. the same thing. Right. It's not the right. same thing.
No, I agree. And, I, you know, in basketball, right, like Ice Cube has this 3-on-3 league, right? And a lot of those guys, it's a totally different animal, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it, you know, mixed martial arts, it, you know, you can't really change the sport and the inherent danger in it, you know. So there's a lot. I mean, I, you know, I'll be honest with you. I almost ordered this fucking thing, though. Because maybe it's just the sport's better in me, right? Because yeah. I'm looking at that under a round and a half, right? Mm-hmm. Over under 1.5 rounds. Under 1.5 rounds, minus 150. I'm contractually prevented from betting on mixed martial arts in any capacity, and that's why I did not bet under 1.5 rounds. A lot of people were saying it's a sucker bet. I just didn't see any way that that fight was going into an eighth minute one way or the other. Tito was about a 3-1 favorite, but at under 1.5 rounds cash. Chaz Skelly, by the way, UFC featherweight, cashing a ticket on that under 1.5 rounds. All right, we got to get to some picks. Enough rambling. Let's get to the main event challenge.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finished fight! I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
See, there's a prime Ken Flo with the voice like 3 octaves higher. You know, I was noticing singing
Mickey
in the car.
Mouse over there.
I was singing in the car with my kids. I can't hit notes in songs that I used to be able to hit.
You can't go into the falsetto, kid?
No, I mean, there are notes that legit, I mean, I really strain now to hit that I used to be able to just fucking crush, you know?
The kids are laughing at you. Dad, terrible. What are you doing? Yeah.
Oh, well, they're just like, Dad, shut up. Like, now they're just like, Dad, can you please stop singing? In 3 years, they're going to be like, Dad, shut the fuck up, man. You know?
You're embarrassing.
I think it's EA Sports UFC 3 is to blame. Yeah. Forever damaged my voice in that video game. All right, so Team Anik led it 134-122 going into UFC Fight Night Blades versus Ngannou 2. Not a great week for our guest picker, Eric. Not a great week for the flow, but Team Florian wins its second straight week. 2-1 the final. 135-124 with 2 UFC live events coming up this weekend. And with us to make picks today, making his return, you know him from oddshark.com, now with hotspawnesports.com. Justin Hartling is with us. Justin, appreciate your time today, sir. How are you, man?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. And, of course, I'm here to reclaim my victory over Florian, UFC 220 back in the day. Thought Burgos could pull it out, but he was wrong on that one, and I'm here to defend yet again.
Well, it's good to have you back, and I know you're in the esports world now, and maybe on a day when we have more time, I'll ask you about all that noise, because talk about ignorant. I'm first in line when it comes to esports, but we got some picks to make. Let's start with the Friday Nighter Tough 28 finale in Las Vegas. 2 picks out of you guys on this card. First up, good fight at bantamweight. Pedro Munhoz minus 280. Old friend Brian Caraway comes back at plus 200. Munhoz has won 5 of his last 6. Big win over Brett Johns at UFC 227 in August. He takes on Brian Caraway, idle since a March loss to Cody Stamann by split decision. Justin, Munhoz and Caraway, who do you like?
Yeah, I'm going to have to take the chalk. I'm going with Munhoz on this one. It's a little harder than you would think just looking at that line, but one of the big things that I kind of saw watching the last few fights is Stamann really started to chew up Caraway in that third round of their fight with the leg kicks. And that's something that Munoz loves to do. He loves to take out the legs of his opponent. And Caraway, obviously, he likes to pressure himself. He likes to move forward a bit. So that leaves those lead legs open. And if Munoz can just kind of continue to chip away at Caraway early, then that plays in obviously well to him later. Munoz does scare me because at times he looks like a punching bag. His defense could use some work. But at the end of the day, I don't think Caraway necessarily has the power to make him pay for that. So I say the play in this one is Munoz.
Yeah, some good analysis there. Munoz, he does love his striking, Kenny. He really does. He feels like he is sparring favorably with professional boxers. As a mixed martial artist, sort of an underappreciated resume, 16-3, the only pro losses all on the scorecards. Rafael Assuncao splits to Jimmy Rivera and John Dodson. Brian Caraway, also a hard guy to put away. We know Munoz has never been finished. Your thoughts on Caraway and Munoz coming up this weekend?
Yeah, I think Justin did a nice breakdown there. You know, for Pedro Munoz, listen, I agree. He does get hit a little bit too often for my liking. Defensively has some work to do, but he is improving offensively. Offensively, he's got some nice weapons, and I do think he has the advantage on the feet against Caraway, who really doesn't kick much, you know, kind of throws wide looping punches, you know. He hits decently hard, but I don't think he's going to be the threat that Munoz has to worry about on the feet. Where Caraway does have the advantage, though, is probably with his wrestling. I think that might cancel, you know, the jiu-jitsu and wrestling skills of Munoz out of the equation. I don't know if we're going to see these guys hit the mat. I have trained with both these guys on the ground. Munoz, very talented. Caraway as well. I think Caraway might be a little bit tougher from the top position. Munoz is going to be good both on the bottom and top. So I'm interested to see if this fight does go to the ground. I don't think it does. I think because of that, Munoz will have the advantage on the feet and will win this one.
Yeah, I'm not sure Caraway's got enough pop on the feet. You know, he likes to lead with that left hook and failed takedowns, a lot of uppercuts from Caraway, and Munoz's chin might be there. I'm just not sure he'll be able to crack it hard enough to get Pedro out of there. But a good fight nonetheless, and part of the main card coming up Friday night. The main event from the Pearl at Palms Casino Resort, Kamaru Usman versus Rafael Dos Anjos. Huge fight here at welterweight. Usman 8-0 in the UFC. As such, the prohibitive favorite here, minus 305. Dos Anjos coming back at plus 225. Justin, this will be the first time in Usman's UFC career that he will have fought three times in a calendar year. Dos Anjos back off the loss to Colby Covington this summer. That was for the UFC welterweight title. With the round and the method of victory, Justin, who do you like in the main event?
Yeah, there's no sense in getting pretty with this one. It's got to be Usman. I'm going to take it by decision because RDA is a tough out. But you look at Dos Anjos' last fight, and you could see that Covington broke him down. And that's basically the same kind of game plan Usman's going to come into this fight with. Is he's going to look to pressure him. He's going to look to get RDA against the cage, get him to the mat, and just kind of grind him into a flying dust. And you saw it again in that last fight with RDA and Covington. The size advantage really did start to play up. It wasn't earlier in RDA's fight when he moved up. But when he faced a bigger wrestler who could really get his hands on him, really muscle him to the ground, it caused him a lot of issues. And I think that, you know, Usman might be the best at doing that right now outside of Khabib. So I don't see this playing out much differently. So I'm going to take Usman by decision. And, you know, we're going to obviously talk about his grappling a lot, but his striking is coming a long way, and he's starting to grow in that. But his method to victory in this one is to grapple, bring it to the ground, and I see him doing that pretty much at will for five rounds.
Ken Flo, Kamaru Usman, minus 305, Rafael Dos Anjos, plus 225. Your thoughts on a big main event coming up Friday evening?
While I do like Dos Anjos at 170 pounds, I don't love this matchup here against Kamaru Usman, who really is a true welterweight. He's got the reach. He's got the height advantage. And I think we will truly see a big difference once these guys get face-to-face in the octagon. I think Usman is going to be able to utilize that size advantage repeatedly throughout that fight. Now, Dos Anjos has struggled with wrestlers, high-pressure guys in the past. We can go all the way back to Clay Guida. We can go to Khabib Nurmagomedov, and we can go to his last fight against Colby Covington. This is another southpaw who could smother you, take you out of the game. I think for Dos Anjos to be effective, he needs space in order to move, and he does best when he's chasing you down, when he's backing you up, when he's the grinder. And Usman, just with his size and wrestling skill, is going to be a handful for Dos Anjos. I like Usman in this by decision here against RDA.
All right, that brings us to UFC Fight Night, Dos Santos v. Tuivasa. Good card, by the way, on FS1, Adelaide, Australia, Saturday night in the U.S., Sunday morning in Adelaide. Featured bout in the heavyweight division, the lead horse, Mark Hunt, taking on Justin Willis. Pick'em fight right now, according to Las Vegas, minus 115 or so on both sides. Justin, Mark Hunt, Justin Willis, who do you like?
Yeah, this was probably the one that I've gone back and forth the most on, because I could see a path to victory for either one of these guys. Willis gets out really fast. He's a lot more athletic than you would assume when you look at him. He has quick strikes. He has a bit of a gas tank, not the best in the world, but we saw that he can go a pretty hard round or two in his last few fights. But at the end of the day, I think the difference is just Hunt. His ability to counter-strike is going to be, I think, the big thing in this. Because Willis, great fighter. I think he's got a lot of potential in the division, especially being as shallow as it is. But Hunt is so good at waiting for that perfect time to land that big uppercut or that big cross. And Willis is at his best when he's pushing forward, and he can work behind his fast hands and fast feet. So eventually, that's going to leave him open to getting that one big shot from Hunt that will put Willis down. So I expect Hunt to win this one, but I can see a path to victory for both.
Ken Flo, Mark Hunt coming off a loss to Alexei Olenek. Last win, a knockout of Derek Lewis. That was June of 2017. So Hunt's lost 3 of 4. He's back to 500. 13-13-1.
Yep.
Willis 3-0 in the UFC. Last win in April against Chase Sherman. What do you think here in a pick 'em fight?
As Justin mentioned, I do see both guys. They could definitely win this fight. Hunt, obviously, on the feet with his knockout power. Justin Willis, I could see him outpointing him or maybe grounding out Mark Hunt in this fight. I do think he's got to utilize his strikes to mix in his wrestling game, try to put Hunt on his back. I think that's going to be the easiest path to victory, of course. Hunt is a guy that is going to be dangerous. The last thing that goes in your game is your power, and Hunt, guess what? The guy still has his speed, I think. So this is a tough one to call. I do need points, though. So I'm going to go with Willis. I'm going to go the opposite way. I think Willis wins this one by decision.
Right. I mean, it's like I almost got to figure out a scoring system, right? It's like I might as well just give you Dos Anjos, Kenny, right? Just for the sake of it, because mathematically, maybe you'd be doing that at this point in time. All right, co-main event. This one's interesting. Tyson Pedro, minus 400 against Shogun Hua, the former champion, a plus 300 underdog. Tyson Pedro gets a lot of respect from Las Vegas. In our scoring system, you get an extra 3 points if Shogun Hua wins the fight and you pick him. So 4 in total for the Shogun upset. But Pedro has lost 2 of 3 on paper, Justin, most recently submitted by Ovin St. Preux. What do you think about Tyson Pedro? Not just him in this spot at home in what a lot of people think is a favorable matchup against a fading Shogun, but seems to me to be a fighter that has Vegas's respect at the very least.
Yeah, and I think the thing is obviously when you look at Pedro, is he's so young and athletic, and he has so many pieces and so much potential when you look at him. And the UFC obviously is behind him. They're giving him plenty of chances to showcase his ability. So it makes sense. And obviously when Vegas is setting a line, they're trying to find that sweet spot where they're going to get action on both sides. So it looks like that's going to be Pedro as the big favorite. And I think that that's because a lot of people see Shogun as kind of, you know, over the hill at this point. It's been interesting to see Shogun's evolution over the last few years, throughout his entire career. And at this point, he's become this really, this pressure-based counter-striker almost, where he wants to move forward. It isn't always the most pretty, but he has so much experience that he just has this innate feel for fighting and when to do the right thing. So he's definitely not out of this fight. However,
I look at Pedro, who is big and athletic, and will probably make Shogun look small in there when they're standing side by side. So that's probably going to be the big thing. And we saw, I worry about Shogun, because in his last fight against Anthony Smith, we saw that maybe he's going to struggle against those longer, more athletic, younger fighters at this point in his career. That's not to take anything away from him, but he's got a lot of wear in the tires. And I don't think he has that one hitter quitter power in him to knock out Pedro anymore. So I'm going to go with Pedro in this one. I think Vegas has the line right. I think that this is a matchup that's probably tailored for him to get some more eyeballs and hopefully build his brand.
Good analysis as usual. Justin Hartland, Ken Flo, Tyson Pedro, Shogun, who are your thoughts?
You know, I think Tyson Pedro is definitely a favorite. But it's not like Shogun Hua can't win this fight. I don't think he's a minus 400 type favorite here against Hua, but I do think he will win this fight here. I think that, you know, his age, the fact that he's just going to be fresher, he's going to be fighting, you know, with the crowd behind him. I don't know, man. I do worry about Mauricio Shogun Hua as well. He's not only losing a lot in his last, you know, look, his probably last 10 fights or so, but he's losing with some bad results in a bad way, getting knocked out cold, all that stuff. So I think this is a good matchup for Tyson Pedro, and I see him winning this one.
All right, a couple plays there on Tyson Pedro. Main event now in Adelaide, Australia. This was really the prediction that I was most excited to get from you boys today. Five rounds, if needed, heavyweight division. Former champ and really one of my favorite people in all of MMA, Junior Dos Santos, slight favorite here, minus 145 against the plus 115 underdog, Tai Tuivasa. Justin, need the round and the method of victory here as well, as this is the main event. Who do you like, Tuivasa or Junior Dos Santos?
After a lot of back and forth, I think ultimately I've decided to go with Bam Bam in the second round.
Wow.
By knockout. Because one of the big things with this fight is going to be who takes the center of that octagon first. That is really going to dictate who wins, because JDS wants to be in boxing range. He wants to flick, you know, with his jab, kind of protect himself, keep his opponent at range. But when you look at JDS's last two losses, both by knockout, they both happened in similar fashions. He was backing up, and it came on the counter. So that plays into Tai's hand in this one, because Tuivasa wants to go forward. He wants to be pressing the action. So we've seen in those last couple of fights from JDS that he lost, that he got knocked out in. You see it happens when he's going backwards, because his hands start floating out. They start really reaching a lot, and that leaves him open to a big counter strike. We saw it against Stipe, and we saw it against Overeem. So I think at the end of the day, Tuivasa is going to come out aggressive. We saw that he can eat shots. We saw that in his last fight, because Orlovsky hit him quite a bit. Did he win that fight? I'm not sure. That's not for me to decide. But we saw that he has heart to take those punches, and he can keep moving forward even after that. So I do believe that Tuivasa is just going to keep going forward. He's just going to basically zombie this fight until JDS makes that mistake.
Ken Flo, Tuivasa undefeated, 8-0, 3-0 in the UFC. Last win came against Andrei Arlovsky, I think by decision. So JDS has alternated wins and losses dating to 2012, his last nine. Last fight, beat Blagoy Ivanov, 25 minutes in a main event in Boise, Idaho. That was July 2018. Slight favorite here is Dos Santos against Tuivasa, Ken Flo. Who do you like in the main event?
Well, listen, if we're just going on consistency, obviously Tai Tuivasa has way more momentum. I just don't think he has. Again, you look at his last fight against Arlovsky. I was not impressed. I think that's a guy that you have to be able to stop and win if you're going to be something in the division. And obviously, you know, he could have had an injury heading into that one or whatever it was. Things happen. But I expected more out of Tuivasa. I think he got very sloppy in that fight. Now, Junior Dos Santos' last fight against Ivanov wasn't great either, but I do think it was because of Ivanov's hesitancy to get in the pocket against Dos Santos. So it was tough for him to really land a lot of meaningful shots either way. This is a really tough one to call. I need points. I'm going to go the Junior Dos Santos route. I think he is vulnerable to a counter shot. He throws that right hand and throws himself off balance when he throws that overhand right. He's got to be careful doing that against Tai Tuivasa. I don't know if Tuivasa is going to be able to move forward as much as he likes against a guy who is going to be taller and with a longer reach. So I think JDS gets it done.
All right, you got a method of victory for me, kid?
Yeah, let's go TKO round two.
TKO round two for Junior Dos Santos. And because Ken Flo's trailing on the scorecards, Justin, just need a quick pick for the record. And I like this fight. Jake Matthews, minus 140 against fellow welterweight hopeful Anthony Rocco Martin, who is plus 120. That's Tony Martin out there, but he wants Anthony Rocco Martin now, if you're a little bit confused. Who do you like there, Justin, Matthews or Martin?
Well, I'll just be a nice guy and give Florian a little bit of a chance to catch up. So I'll take Matthews as the favorite.
Matthews is the favorite. Ken Flo, you want Tony Martin in that exchange or what?
I do not. I'm going with I'm going with Matthews. I think he takes it.
All right, Justin Hartling on Twitter. He is exactly that, at Justin Hartling. Great job today, man. Appreciate you stepping up. We'll talk to you soon.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
All right, big weekend for the UFC. Friday night, Saturday night. I always ask for Sunday off from parenting because of the National Football League, so I don't know how we're going to do this weekend, but I think we'll find a way. Hope everybody enjoys the shows. If you are in the greater Los Angeles area and you like to roll, may Rocky BJJ, mayrockybjj.com. You know, Jason Hunt gets a lot of love at mayrockybjj.com. I mean, when I go to that homepage, you know, I tell Jason, I'd like to see Kenny Florian. You know, I scroll down, eventually you're there, but, you know, got Jason Hunt in my face every time I go to the website. Right. 11677 Santa Monica Boulevard, Los Angeles, California. All right, with that, for Ken Flo, I'm John Anik. Thanks to all of our producers. Thank you all for listening. We will talk to you in a few days. Until then, yo, later.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.
San Antonio District Judge resigns after a federal corruption probe.
A former San Antonio, Texas judge goes to federal prison after pleading guilty to accepting bribes in exchange for rigging cases in his court. Angus McGinty committed the ultimate judicial sin. Why did you do it?
I did it because I was foolish.
Listen to How to Bribe a Judge on RevolverPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family, and 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.